Today we shall begin, Bezus Hashem, the discussion of the halachos of Amir al-Akum. What one may or may not ask, hint, tell, command, beg a non-Jew to do or not do on Shabbos for you. Now, those that are here at this shiur, either you have no idea what we're going to discuss today, and ignorance is bliss, or you have such yiras shamayim that you're ready to hear all of the halachos, the complex, complicated halachos of Amir al-Akum, and find out that most of what we think is okay to have a non-Jew to do is, in fact, not so okay.
Remember, ignorance is no excuse.
At this point, ignorance is no excuse. The door is locked. No one can leave. Okay. So, certainly it's proper to know what we can ask a non-Jew to do. Certainly when we're in a pinch. Certainly when emergency situations come up. We have to know what those emergency situations are. And when the rabbis permitted, when the Chacham permitted us to ask for the assistance of a non-Jew. As a general rule, we should know, and this is how the halacha states, this is how the poskim say it, as a general rule, anything that a Jew cannot do on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you can't ask a non-Jew to do for you on Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's the general rule of thumb. If I can't do it, I can't have a non-Jew do it. Now, is this isser of Amir al-Akum, of having a non-Jew do something or telling a non-Jew, what is the nature of the isser? Is it the Oraisa? Is it the Rabbanan? Is it just the Minhag? So we have several opinions, and it's interesting to note the differences between the opinions, although we have to rely and accept all of them for standard halacha, so it's not going to make such a practical difference, but it's good to know the nature and the source of the isser. One comes actually from a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk says, "Kol malacha lo ye'osa lohem." All malacha does not say, all malacha you shall not do, but all malacha shall not be performed for them. Which indicates and implies that even for someone else to do malacha for me may not be done. I can't ask my friend to do a malacha for me, and I can't even ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me. And again, that's why it's the standard rule of thumb. You can't ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you. That's based on the pasuk. Even though there is a pasuk, does not mean that it is a biblical isser. There are those, Rashi does learn that it is isser d'oraisa, which obviously makes it much more severe. But most of the Peskim agree that it's only of rabbinic nature, it's only midrabbanan. That's going to be very, very important when we get to the areas where actually you can ask for the assistance of a non-Jew, and you can have him do malacha for you, because it's only midrabbanan, the whole idea of telling a non-Jew to do something. So Rambam tells us the reason why we can't have a non-Jew do something for us is because if we are allowed to have others who don't have to keep Shabbos for us, if we can have them do everything that we need to do for Shabbos, so then Shabbos would become a little less important in our own eyes in terms of the not doing malachas on Shabbos, and we ourselves, the Chacham, we're afraid that we ourselves may come to do malachas ourselves. Because for years, when I had my good live-in help, my shiksa, who knew everything, she was a great Shabbos guy, and she did everything. Now she decided after 17 years to retire. She went back to Barbados or who knows where. And now I'm stuck trying to train in somebody new, but doesn't know. She's still trying to get the word chulent out. And she just... But meanwhile, I'm so accustomed to having everything done, you know, what could be so bad? And that's what they were afraid of, that we may end up doing malacha ourselves. That's Rambam's opinion.
But that's okay.
What's okay?
To have somebody in your house, you know,
to have help in your house? Nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I saw that, you know, years ago, and I didn't know, you know, that was okay.
No. Are you saying it just creates more of a challenge, certainly when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. When it comes to Bishalakim, cooking, that's another area. Okay.
You're saying Rambam?
Rambam. Maimonides, yes.
Thank you.
Rashi tells us another reason. And a second reason is that anything, this is also comes from the Navi Yeshaya, anything that you can't do on Shabbos, you also can't talk about on Shabbos.
Oh.
Comes from the pasuk of V'daber Dover. It's Mimso Chefsecha V'daber Dover. Mimso Chefsecha, you can't take care of your needs on Shabbos and prepare for the weekday. And V'daber Dover, even in your speech, the Gemara tells our speech on Shabbos has to be different than that of the weekday. Some who are very strict about this, and they won't even say good morning or good night on Shabbos. They'll only say good Shabbos. That will be their greeting. But what's not allowed to do is you're not allowed to say something that you can't do on Shabbos, you can't say on Shabbos. And this is unfortunately a very common mistake that people make, and that is, oh, I'll call you after Shabbos and we'll discuss the
thing we can't talk about.
The thing we can't do. Or I'll call you after Shabbos about when we're going to drive to New York. So they get two in one. I'm driving to New York, that's one. I'm calling you after Shabbos. You want to say I'll get in touch with you after Shabbos? No problem. You want to say we have to go to New York after Shabbos? That's not a problem. But to say the thing that's prohibited to do is a problem. So you can't even say, you know what, I'm going to turn on the light after Shabbos. I'm going to wash the laundry after Shabbos. Something you can't do, you can't say that on Shabbos. So right over there is a problem of telling a non-Jew to do something. What are you going to tell them to do? Could you turn on the light? Then you're saying, turn on the light. You're saying something that's forbidden to do on Shabbos. You're saying it, so that's the problem. So that's the second reason. One, that Shabbos shouldn't become unimportant in our own attitude. Two, to say something that's prohibited on Shabbos. And a third reason is, and this would apply even if I don't tell him to do anything, he does it on his own. And that is that when a non-Jew does malacha for me, he becomes my shliach. He becomes my agent for doing this thing on Shabbos. So it's considered as if I'm doing it on Shabbos. When he sees I'm sitting in a room and the lights go off and I'm in the middle of reading and the live-in help sees that the lights went off, goes over the lights, puts it back on. Has done it for me, and that's considered as if that she is my agent for doing it. In halakhic terms, that means as if I did it. Now we shall see that even in that case, where she did it on her own, I would have to stop her before she does it because she's doing my work essentially, and that can't be done. And even after that, they restrict it to have benefit from something that a non-Jew does for me. So those are three reasons. Now, if you want to use your Gemara cup this morning, you would say, what are the differences between the reasons? And one you can think of on your own, and that is, let's say I have the non-Jew before Shabbos. I say, listen, I need the lights on in this room for Friday night, or I need the lights on in the basement for Friday night because they're going to have a meal over there, or more, I'm going to have people there. But then I'm going to need the lights shut at 10 o'clock. I need them shut. You tell them before Shabbos. Okay? So, you have just enlisted his help as your agent, so they have that problem. The non-Jew is doing work on Shabbos for me, so you have the first problem that my work is being done through someone else. But the middle problem of saying something on Shabbos,
You didn't do.
So you're sort of safe from that one. Then you have another scenario. On Shabbos, you tell the non-Jew, listen, as soon as Shabbos is out, I want you to start with the laundry. I want you to start the laundry as soon as Shabbos is out. Or I want you to mow the lawn right after Shabbos is over. They're not doing the malacha on Shabbos, so they're not going to be, it's not my shliach on Shabbos, and they're not doing the malacha on Shabbos. But I've spoken out what has to be done on Shabbos. So any of these reasons, wherever they would apply, would be a problem of Amira La'akum. Okay?
giving a list to a non-Jewish person ahead of time of all the things and not discussing it with that person at all.
Right, so you haven't said it. You write it down on a piece of paper before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos.
Right? And
but of things, let's say, of like wash, something that you could do, like
washing the dishes?
Well, you really
or sweeping
to
the floor?
If you don't need the dishes, right?
Okay, but usually
like,
dishes, yeah.
You need so you need the dishes Friday night for Shabbos afternoon. So let's say washing the dishes, sweeping the floor, setting the table's okay. But could you do that?
Well, setting the table could have its own challenges, right?
That's true.
For example,
can you supervise?
You have all the cutlery in the dish drainer, and it just finished drying Friday night. Shabbos morning, you wake up early. You're up at 6:30. For some odd reason, you couldn't sleep. You grab all the silverware and you start setting the table. Right? You pull out a knife here, a fork here. You set the table, and then you go to shul. So now the table is set from the time you get home from shul. What have you just done?
Sorted.
You've just sorted. It's a bore midoraisa because it's not for immediate use. So would you be able to tell the non-Jew to do that?
Well, it depends. Because you had said once before that you just throw everything on the table and, you know, do it that way. So if she's deciding to be didactic about, you know, doing whatever, you know, you said this is how I'm doing it. She does it on her own. I'm not there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't care less if she...
Okay.
You can take what you want. You can't just take all the knives out first and then take all the forks out. You can take what she wants.
But you have to take what you want.
Take what you want first. And,
but it has to be
first.
For immediate use.
So
if you're going to set the table and then go to shul, that's not immediate use. So that's where the problem is.
For the non-Jewish person, but, for you.
Well, for you. And if you tell the non-Jews to do that, it would create a problem too. Now, Mrs. Fett is bringing up a good point.
She
what if this...
Away.
Huh?
Somebody's walking.
No, she dropped something.
I'm sorry.
What if there is a permissible way for you to do it? There's the non-permissible way and the permissible way for you to do it. Okay? As we'll see, the very, very simple example of that is washing dishes. You can't wash dishes with hot water on Shabbos. You can wash them with cold water. So can I tell the non-Jew, please wash the dishes, and they're going to do it with hot water? So that we'll see. That doing it with hot water, they're doing it on their own. I didn't tell them to do it with hot water. They could do it with cold water. It may be hotter. It may take longer. So for their own ease, for their own convenience, they're going to use hot water. That's not my problem.
Washing dishes this afternoon, it's not
Oh, if you don't need it, you mean?
Right.
Yeah. If you don't need it, then you should not tell the non-Jew to do it. Yes. That's right. So, in your case, well, I'll get back to your case, but setting the dishes, setting the table.
Separate question.
Yes.
I actually wasn't asking for myself. In like a sterling thing, you have absolute divisions. Okay, so if you're put, like all the forks are already separated, if it's already a separated thing, you can put them in separate things, right? I mean, I don't, because I never want to ask, so I just dump them in the drawer and figure let somebody else do it. But can you really put them, there's a place for the fork, the little fork, the whatever, you know,
right.
The spoons and knives.
Right.
There's no problem with burning there, because it would be like putting a book back exactly where you took it, right? You can put it...
But again, where are you taking it from?
If it's sitting on the... You know, somebody's left it out. Somebody... It's at the table and it wasn't used.
Wasn't used. One fork, you mean?
Yeah. Like
an individual fork, an individual knife, to put it back, let's say, in its compartment in the drawer or in its compartment in the box, that's permissible, sure. Yeah. And the other way around, if it's in the box or it's in the drawer, each one in their own space, then you can take them out. You can set the table that way, because then there's not there's no taruvus over there. There's no mixture.
What if you see that you have two different sets, and somebody's put them back wrong, being in my life, and you take it out, you've got your two forks. I vaguely remember you saying something about you can't pick and choose. You're stuck with using that fork. The incorrect one that doesn't match the set of everything else on the table?
You have a mixture of forks with two different sets and you want to take one?
I realize that there's wrong forks in there. I've got to get the wrong fork away to get to the ones I want.
To get to the
Not
ones
the
you want.
Set. Not the matching set. It would totally destroy my meal because I'm But don't let that get
right. So and it's all stacked up.
It's stacked up.
So you,
three down, it's the wrong fork.
Right.
You know, so I have to use that wrong fork so that I can get to the other ones.
No, you can lift it up to get the other ones out.
Out.
Yeah, if you're setting the table now for immediate use, you can do that. Yeah, okay. That's what's great about doing halacha shiurim with women. We start with one topic and we end up somewhere totally... okay.
If I turn the tape off, I will tell you an amazing story to prove why you can't talk about things on Shabbos.
Now, not only is it prohibited to ask a non-Jew to do work for us on Shabbos, malacha, which we can't do on Shabbos. But if he does it on his own, we said, it's also problematic, and we would have to actually stop them before they go to turn on the light for us, before they go to relight the stove for us. We would have to stop them and say, you can't do that. What if they did it anyway?
You can't light the stove anyway.
I'm sorry?
If you have a non-Jew in your house, and you need help with cooking, you can't have a non-Jew light the stove anyway. Am I right?
Yeah, okay, but you'll get around that
so
issue.
Because
they'll relight it but you'll put on the pot. And as you have a blech and you have your pot cooking on the blech and all of a sudden someone opens the door and the fire blows out. What are we going to do? So I'll take off the soup or the pot from the stove and they'll relight it and then I'll put it back on. So I put it on, it won't be a problem of Bishalakim, but it will be the problem that I'm benefiting from the fire that they have created. So aside from the problem of them doing something, I can't even benefit when they do something. However, that's only if it's direct benefit, if it's direct hana. And like the case we just gave, if they relight a fire, or they start a fire in the first place on the stove, or they plug in an electric appliance, which was of no use to me before, and I had no benefit from beforehand, and now they make it usable, or now they put something here that's going to be direct benefit, that I cannot use this Shabbos.
So the Moise okay for that live-in to
live-in,
yeah. I had the
opposite. What? You're still harboring with the fact of having a living. They could sweep the floor, they could mop the floor, they could clean the table, they could serve, they could wash the dishes. All sorts of things.
The scenario you just gave, don't worry, I'm not going to go to what I said last week.
Yeah.
The scenario you just gave about, okay, she lights the fire, she relights the fire and the cholent pot goes on, back on, or whatever. Okay, but what if that's her lunch too? Doesn't that change the whole parameter of it? She's relit it because she's no dummy. She wants to eat after lunch. Or
eat
after she does her dishes or whatever.
True. If you have a non-Jew who is who has a Gemara cup, and indeed, if she's doing it for herself.
But how would you know that?
Well,
Sorry.
Right.
No,
that's the first problem. when they see it's your problem and you're shrieking like, oh, the fire just went out, and they're doing it, obviously they're doing it for you. The case of doing it themselves is they decide, you know what, they're very heimish in your house and they just make up their own coffee and they'll put up a pot of coffee.
No, I meant more about relighting the fire. If a fire goes out...
No, that's a separate problem, because if it's a live-in, then there's a suspicion that they see, oh, I see that she likes coffee, so I'll do this every week, and she's really going to be doing it for you then. But, yes, yeah, so in that case where they do it for themselves, as we'll see cases like that, then it will be permissible to benefit, but usually that's not the case.
Or she adds water to the urn on Yom Tov. Or something.
Well,
you could do that on Yom Tov. You could do it anyway. So that's a separate issue. We'll talk about those cases. There's a different category. Okay, so direct benefit, even if they do it on their own, cannot be done. For example, they turn a light on in a room. It was in the basement. It's pitch black. You can't really do anything in the basement because it's so dark. They turn the light on for you because they overheard you talking, oh, the light, you forgot to turn the light on. And she comes back a few minutes later, it's on. Or she gives you a wink. everything taken care of, right? You can't use that basement for anything that you couldn't do without the light. Something you can do even without a light on, then you can still do that in that room because it was of no benefit. Like we said, she put in an appliance, or she heated up some water, put on a relit the fire. All of these cases you will not be able to benefit from. Here's another example. You have your suit for Shabbos, or your dress for Shabbos, becomes, you have one of the grandchildren over, and she decided to dump a bowl of chalent on your dress Shabbos morning. Then she was trying to wipe it off, or he was trying to wipe it off, so she takes a napkin and tries to wipe off the whole thing. So now it's all smeared up like that. Not usable the way it is. The non-Jewish help is asked to assist, or on her own, or cleans the garment. Can't wear that garment this Shabbos. Since you couldn't wear it beforehand, you can't wear it now. That's called direct benefit. Direct benefit is anything that you really could not have done beforehand without the non-Jew doing this malacha. You can't benefit from that malacha. So that's why if turning on a light, which you couldn't use that room beforehand, then that would be considered direct benefit. Let's say you have a room where there's sunlight. So you could sit in the room. You could even read in the room because there's sunlight. Then she turns the light on for you. You could still stay in the room. You don't have to leave the room. You can still stay in the room and still use the sunlight. But when the sun goes down, and now you have no more sunlight, and now it's only the light that you're able to read in the room, you can't read in the room anymore. So you have to keep that in mind. Or a different scenario. There was a light on in the room. But it was on a Shabbos clock. And she turned on an additional light. No problem. You could stay in the room because you had the first light. As soon as that first light goes off with the clock, now you can't read in that room anymore. You can't do things in that room that you would not be able to have done without the malacha of the non-Jew.
What if the reason she turned it on was for you, but since it's on, you know, like 30 minutes later she comes in, she cleans up in there, like, so she uses it. Like, the reason she turned it on was for you, but then in the, you know, process she uses it for herself as well.
Right. Once she turns it on for you, you can't have any benefit. Even though now she would want to use it, to have benefit from it. The opposite way, if she did it for herself, then we'll see, then you could. Yeah, then you can, right.
What about walking into a room, she walks in, she turns the light on, she leaves because you turn it off. It's all the bedrooms. Everybody just sleeps for 3 days with lights on. That's
yeah.
Me too. Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's a way around that. That's not comfy.
She comes into the room and turns the lights on. Oh, and let's say Shabbos morning, or it's a 2-day Yom Tov. To clean up, to make the beds and tidy up the room, she turns the light on. And for some reason, she decides not to turn them off. Okay, and now it comes at nighttime. What can be done in such a case? That's your question. Okay.
That happens in the hotels a lot. People should really do a disturb sign on there. Don't let them make your bed. Right.
Put something over it.
Now, we'll get to that in a moment. If an non-Jew does malacha, but it is, to me, of indirect benefit, then it's permissible to gain and take benefit from what the non-Jew has done. If it's indirect benefit. Now, one case of indirect benefit is if they remove an obstacle from the area. For example, let's say it was a Yom Tov or a Shabbos, and the stove was on, or the oven was on, and it's a small kitchen, and it was becoming extremely uncomfortably hot. And you say something that is very hot, and they on their own decide to turn off the oven, or turn off the flame, right? Now becomes bearable. Since it's only taking away an obstacle, it's not considered direct benefit. In halakhic terms, it's not considered direct benefit, and therefore one would now be able to sit in that room and enjoy that room, even though they would not have been able to beforehand. Same goes with the light on in the room, and one cannot sleep. If the non-Jew now turns off the light, that's not considered direct benefit to me, because I really could have slept anyway, and it's only considered taking away an impediment, and it's permissible now to sleep in the room. That is one case, actually, as we'll see. That's one case where it wouldn't be permissible to hint to a non-Jew, because hinting, people are very confused, number one, how to hint. And even if you hint, we said, even if the non-Jew on his own goes to do something for you, I can't benefit from it. So what does it help if they hint? So hinting, as we'll see, only helps in a case where I don't benefit directly from the work that the non-Jew will do. For example, to hint to the non-Jew to turn the lights off, that would be permissible. If one hints in the right way, they can have the non-Jew turn the light off, because that's not considered a direct benefit to me, and then one can sleep in the room. Yes?
Okay. What about non-religious family who thinks that they can be your Shabbos boy?
Right.
They're not from. So if they see that, like, you forget to turn your light on, they see you forget to turn your light off before Shabbos, and then, you know, your family says, oh, you left the light on, you know, are you allowed to sleep in the room now? Because they turned it off for you.
So again, if they turn the light off, that's not considered direct benefit. So you can sleep in that room.
Even if you totally were not going to sleep in it because the
right.
light was on.
If they turn, Rav Moshe has a tshuva about that, about non-religious Jews doing malacha for other Jews. And if they, let's say, turn the light on, you know, they said, oh, you know, this light just shut off. You didn't realize that you were going to still be in this room. They turn it on for you, then you can't benefit from it. Right.
It's the same exact.
In that case, it would be the same as the non-Jew. That's right.
My mother owned a shalmo. She said, the sin will be on me.
Right.
The sin will be on me.
So, again, just to review, direct benefit is... It's not permissible to have direct benefit, even if they did. I don't know if they did it for me. Cannot direct benefit. Can't a light, an appliance, the heat. Direct benefit. Indirect benefit, when it's taking something away, is permissible once they have done it. Okay. Now we have a third category, and that is additional benefit.
Right. Sometimes a question as to how you categorize something. So let's say it's summertime and it's hot. The way to remove the obstacle of heat is to turn the air conditioner up. Is that taking away the heat, or is that increasing the cool? What's that?
Right. So actually, Ramesh speaks about that case too. And he says that really the room is not a functional room. And so let's say it's a room that gets a lot of sun, or it's in a part of the house that is just too stifling that you really can't be there without it. That, he says, is considered direct benefit, because what the non-Jew is doing is putting on the air conditioner and bringing the cold room into the air, and that is considered a direct benefit, not just taking away the heat. So that would not be permissible in that case.
Unless it was for them too.
Now again, if they're cleaning up in the various rooms and they come into this room as well, and they turn it on for themselves, once it's on, as we'll see in a moment. Okay?
And vice versa, if it's cold in the room and you want the heat on, it's the same.
Same thing, yeah. Now heat is a little bit different, as that we'll see a little later, when certain cases when we can actually tell a non-Jew directly to turn on something and do something for us. Yes, there are those few cases that we have.
Maybe if it's like that.
But even not pikuach nefesh. But even we'll see that when it's cold and it's for a matter of turning on the heat, we're very lenient.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're hinting.
Because of a halacha of hakol chaylam eitzel tzina. Everyone's considered like a chayla, like an ill person, when it comes to being too cold. Especially if there's older people in the house or little children in the house. Turn on the heat, we'll see, is pretty lenient, as we'll see.
I tried hinting one time to my non-Jewish next-door neighbor,
it was Sukkot, and for some reason, the lights all around the house got turned out. We had big lights all over. So I went next door, and I wanted her to turn the lights off, but I didn't want to ask her. So I said, I really apologize for all the lights that they're bothering you. She said, no, they're fine. So I don't know if there's a knack to hinting.
Yeah.
I could not bring her.
Or you have to have a neighbor who knows.
So if your help runs the dishwasher because it's really making her job easier, that's okay. So let's say you didn't ask them, and on their own they instead of washing dishes, they put it in the dishwasher and run it. That, which means, would you consider that direct benefit or indirect benefit? Well, it really is direct benefit in that case, because you couldn't use the dishes while they're dirty. If you're coming, you're saying now a different reason why it would be permissible, and that's because they're doing it on their own. And when they do things on their own, yes, it will be permissible. Let's get to that category of doing it on their own, but let's just finish with this additional benefit first. So the additional benefit cases would be as follows. Actually, we mentioned some of them. Let's say you have already one light on in the room, and they put on an additional light. So maybe it makes it easier to read now, makes it easier to use the room, it's more functional. But it's since I was able to use the room beforehand, I was able to read with the one light, I may have had to squint, I may have had to look closer, but if I was able to use it for whatever function I wanted to do, for whatever work I wanted to do, in this case reading, and they put on an additional light, it will be permissible to benefit from that. Or we gave this case that the child who dirtied the dress or the suit. So if it's only a minor stain and I would wear it anyhow, and now the Janju decided to clean it on their own, that's not considered direct benefit, that's additional benefit, because I would have worn the garment. I could wear the garment. And now it makes it easier. That's similar to the case of I'm able to read, it makes it easier for me to read. So that will be permissible to benefit from. Okay, now let's
excuse me, can I just
yeah. So I want to just conclude this
okay, just quickly.
Where they do it on their own.
Walking out the door. Wait, let me clean that for you.
Right, so that to allow them to do it is the first problem. They are doing malacha for me on Shabbos, number one, and I wouldn't be able to do it, so they can't do it. Number two, they become my shliach.
But you're walking out the door with the shoes anyway. They're just saying, let me
right.
clean this.
Right, so that's where there's two issues. One issue is the actually having the non-Jew do the malacha for me, or my telling them, which is a problem of a daber dover, speaking things of another job, or they're my shliach because they're doing it for me, or I'm allowing them to do malacha for me. That's one category. Excuse me. Then after all that is taken care of, then we have another problem. Even if they do it on their own, I can't benefit from it. So if they do it on their own, while I'm talking to someone, they went and cleaned off the garment unbeknownst to me, in that case I could derive benefit from it because it's only additional benefit. But I still have to make sure that the first problem wasn't interfered with, and that is having them do it for me or allowing them to do a malacha for me. So that's why it's really two separate areas, right? Is that understood?
No, because you just said that if you were going to do it anyway, it's just additional benefit. So
you can't do it.
No, if you would have gone to wear it anyway.
You were going to wear it anyway. So again, so to have the non-Jew do it is a problem, which is directing a non-Jew to do malacha for me, having a non-Jew do malacha for me, asking a non-Jew to do malacha for me, that I can't do. So I can never ask them to do it, I can never tell them to do it. So where would it be?
Because you had said that if you're going to wear the dress or the shoes, because that's more, I mean...
The shoes, okay.
I don't think any of us would wear something with a chomp all over it.
Right.
So the shoes, they have mud. You're wearing them anyway, you're walking out the door. Some people, you know, whatever. She looks just... Oh, stop a second. You know,
right.
She wants to wipe it off, but you're already leaving, so you're
right. So in that case, again,
benefit.
No. But the only case of indirect benefit which I can benefit or additional benefit which I can is if they do it on their own. But if
she is doing it on her own.
No, but after the fact.
If she saw it in the closet before.
Right. If they do it on their own, it's after the fact. But if I know they're doing it, I have to stop them. No different if they walk into a room and say, oh, I'll turn the light for you, I have to stop them. Right. So that's why these halachos are very complicated. Even if they're going to do it on their own.
It's in place when you know she's going to see it.
Okay. So let's just finish up with this case. We'll finish up with the case of if a non-Jew does malacha for himself or for herself. Okay? And this is if you have a non-Jew around in the house, whether it be a nurse for an elderly relative in the house, or you have a live-in help, and they themselves going about the house, so they'll turn on lights, turn off lights, they can't do that. They're allowed to do that. And then the non-Jew turns on the light for himself or for herself. Once they turn it on, I'm allowed to benefit from it. They decided to go into a particular room which I didn't have the light on before Shabbos, they turn the light on, I can then go into that room and benefit from the light being on. Okay? They turn on the stove to cook something for themselves. Let's say they have their own pot and their own cutlery to eat with, and they decide to cook with that. Right? And you can benefit from that fire. You would have other issues of bishul, but assuming there would not be a problem with bishul, you're just coming to warm up something that's dry, you put it on top of it, then you could benefit from that once they've done it for themselves. Okay? The Aruch HaShulchan writes, who's a Rav in Poland, he writes, in Lithuania I should say, that when in the long winter Friday nights, when the candles weren't long enough to burn to go down to the cellar for additional wine if they would need something in the cellar, so they would call in some non-Jew from outside. They say, would you like do you want a drink? Would you like some whiskey? The guy was just, sure. All right, come in. Then they would say, oh, it's in the cellar, but we can't really see in the cellar. Oh, sure, no problem. He lights up a match or a candle, goes down to the cellar. Once he's down in the cellar and he turned the light on himself, and they said, then they used to get whatever they needed, and they used to give him his shot of whiskey, and he left. Okay, and you can keep doing that until the guy catches on what you want him to do. Then you have to stop that once they realize it, because then they're doing it for you, and they're not doing it for them. But that would be permissible to do. We once had a situation where we needed to open our oven door. Okay, that's a separate case. We'll talk about that another time. But you're allowed to have a non-Jew come to the house and open the oven door, which is on. You can have them open, you can tell them directly. Okay? So that particular Shabbos, or Yom Tov, someone also turned the bathroom light off. Okay, what can you do? The bathroom light is off. You can't use that bathroom. So this woman came to the house. We asked him to open the oven door. And she says, well, she's a little bit spooked out. She says, I need to wash my hands first. Is it fine? We directed her to the bathroom, and she was going to wash her hands. She walked in the bathroom, turned the light on, and washed her hands. At that point, we grabbed her, not literally, and said, please don't turn it off. Once they turned it on, they turned it off for themselves. You can benefit from it.
You can say, don't turn it off?
Yes, you can say, don't turn it off. We say, don't do a malacha. That's what you're allowed to say. That's right. That's not a problem. So once they've done it for themselves, then it is permissible to benefit from that. So that would be a case where, I guess you would say, it's convenient to have a non-Jew around, and they do end up doing things for themselves that you can thereby benefit. As long as they're not doing it for the Jew, they're doing it for themselves, then you can be a beneficiary of that. We'll hold it here, and we'll pick it up next week.